All right, this is Pure Decking for Thursday, July something. What the July 13th, 2017. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like existing as a creature of rage and alcoholism, information security, and making improper sacrifices to the computing gods. I'm Morps, and tonight I have Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Sam Adams Golden Hour.
I also have Mr. BSV. Oh, I do have it. Hang on.
I definitely feel welcome now.
Excellent. What are you drinking, BSV?
Just some Angry Orchard.
More Angry Orchard. I actually tried making something. I'm going to try making my own cider at some point, I think. And finally, I don't have a... Well, I guess this one.
Smoke weed every day.
Why not? Sart.
What's up? I've got a shucked up.
That's actually Suave's intro, but you know, hey, why not?
I'll stand in for the major today. Why not? Yeah.
So, anyways, I am drinking Captain Morgan's Cannonball at the moment out of the wrong glass because I think the rest of them are dirty. Anyways,
I'm fairly certain the alcohol doesn't know or care what glass it's being drunk.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is that sacrilege or is that just whatever?
At this point, I'd call it ingenuity because there's probably way too much rum in that glass. Anyways, you ever been to the I can't remember the name of the place now. It's one of those soda fountain shops where it's like a 12-ounce glass. Or, I mean, it's more than that.
Nice.
It's this big metal tankard, and it's you can pour like 3 cans of Coke in the damn thing. It's great. I've had this thing for a while now, but that's what I'm using, so.
Awesome.
The amount of the rum, rum in it is probably way too much. Anyways.
You mean just enough. You were talking about making your own cider. I've thought about making my own mead. I thought about doing that. That takes like a year, though.
Well, it doesn't ferment that shit. You can. I found a recipe actually in the Digital Dojo for last week. There was a recipe for doing quick mead that only takes like 6 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sweet. I'm gonna check that out.
So yeah, you want to look into that. And
Thor also has a 6-week recipe if you ever hit him up.
Lore does? Is that what you said?
I believe it was Lore, yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay.
You sure it wasn't Rofaxen?
Oh. I don't know.
Because Rofaxen was the one who used to make his own wines and meads. But Lore could have had a recipe too. I don't know. Cycros tried to DCC me in ebook after I went AFK last week, so who knows? But if he's got that book in some manner for you, because it was about making mead the Viking way, I believe, according to the conversation we were having.
That's cool.
Sometime during the show.
Please tell me it involves the Blood Eagle.
It does involve apparently some unusual methods of gathering your yeast. So
unusual methods.
But natural yeast, right? So you have to go find like a magic log or something? I don't know. Anyways. So yeah, where was I? Lead story is from Engadget, just because I like the concept. So we'll throw this link in there. Throw the link again in here. And it is from Engadget. EVE Online has launched the Project Discovery minigame it announced earlier this year. And you can now defend all the hours you spend in the game by telling your mother or your significant other that you're helping the scientific community find exoplanets. EVE has uploaded real astronomical data from the Korat Space Observatory that you can analyze with the minigame as a pilot. Once enough players reach the same conclusion on the data's classification, that piece of info would then be sent to the University of Geneva for a deeper look. The Space Sims developers teamed up with the massive multiplayer online science Reviac University of Geneva Michael Mayer for this particular project. However, it's far from their first time to crowdsource scientific endeavor. Back in 2015, they also asked their users to help it. Analyzing images for human protein Atlas, the new project discovery effort is more connected to the game's theme, though. So, yeah, it's EVE Online put a mini game in their MMO of examining the exoplanet data. And when they get like a consensus of users saying that there's something here, they actually send it off to Geneva to get looked at.
That is fucking rad.
I thought that was kind of cool. It's like a neat way to use some of these MMOs. I mean, you know, if you told me that you could do folding at home while you were playing, I don't know, WoW or, you know, something. I mean,
it's
think
all
how much this shit
to.
Would get ran.
Oh, definitely.
Especially on some of these older MMOs like EVE that don't need all the horsepower modern gaming rigs throw at them.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're
talk
exactly
about crowdsourcing, right?
Hell yeah. I want to get all the, I mean, computing resources you need integrated in something like that. That's perfect.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. Here it is. So I'm going to use folding at home again as the example because that's the one that always comes to mind, even though I think there's probably like 13 others now. So you want to play the original EverQuest for that nostalgia feeling, but your machine is just too fast. So all the extra cycles get eaten up by folding at home, and then it runs it like it's a machine from 1990 just to make it fair.
Perfect. At least it evens the playing field for everybody too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you think about it. If you're using something like folding at home to soak up all the extra horsepower of a CPU to play classic games at the correct speed.
Yeah.
I mean, that. Yeah.
I think that's an awesome idea. That'd be sweet. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I think everyone, once you find out about folding at home, you know, you always get kind of like, dude, I'm going to get on that leaderboard, check this out. And a bunch of guys at work and I did it, and we had a room full of old servers and shit. It's like, well, get us a bunch of thumb drives, copy an operating system onto it, just boot to the thumb drive. We were folding at home with old servers and stuff like that, just sitting in, that we weren't even using, sitting in a room. We also might have been mining something, but I won't talk about that. But yeah, man, it's just competitive, just like another game, like you said, man. That's a good way to use those resources. They're essentially just wasted.
I love the concept of getting some of these MMO clients to actually work on scientific data. Actually, the one that I think would be really cool is if you took something like, what was the space sim that actually used real astronomical data? Brain Function. I think I even played it for a while.
I don't know that one. Real stars and stuff?
Yeah, they used star maps. I mean, of course, all the content wasn't because they had space stations and aliens and shit, but,
yeah.
Oh, that's hell.
Cool,
you and Static played it.
Yeah, I want to say it was Elite Dangerous. Was it Elite Dangerous that actually
Elite Dangerous,
started?
So.
I don't know. I don't know that they used
that
it.
One.
Now I gotta Google it. Space sim real data. Space sim Elite Dangerous. Okay, it was Elite Dangerous. Okay. Yeah, so if you took something like Elite Dangerous with real astronomical data for like where, you know, planets and shit might be and let players explore it and sit there, I mean, you would get so much of this data churned through if you could gamify it, you know? Make an MMO out of it?
Oh, yeah. Integrate it on WoW and just freaking watch the cycles come in.
It's like, solve this and, you know, get a longsword. You'd get so much of it done.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, if you make it an epic quest available for everyone, get an epic level item equipable to whatever your loot thing is, everyone would run it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how you turn that into useful data, but that's something for a scientist to work on.
Oh, no. What it does is just eats up your cycle while you're grinding for zebra hooves or whatever the fuck it is. It's not a game. It's just playing in the background while you do fuck all in an MMO.
Cool. Alright, well, I just love the concept of that, so I wanted to talk about that. And next up, so we just had something really cool, so we got to balance it out, right? And I don't know if this is the most cyberpunk thing I've heard or the just most depressing thing I've heard. But to appropriately intro this next story.
Hans or the Count. Hans or the Count. Hans or the Count.
This next story is from .esports.com. Using Hanzo Main as an insult will get you labeled as a heretic in the Church of Hanzo. The Church of Hanzo is something that actually exists. It is an Overwatch player in Brazil set up the religious organization called the Hanzo National Church. The reason? Hanzo looks kind of like Jesus. To join, you have to be baptized by playing Overwatch. If you can't afford Overwatch, Paladins also works. The whole thing is ridiculous, and it's meant to be. The founder of the Hanzo National Church intended to demonstrate how easy it is to set up a tax-free religious organization throughout the Brazilian government. Religious groups in Brazil now include the Hanzo National Church, which are exempt from certain taxes, among other benefits. So there's rules, of course. The Hanzo National Church members have a free Tuesday each month to play Overwatch all day. It's in the name of religious studies, after all. Eating fatty foods is encouraged, too.
Wow.
And here's the quote from the guy who founded it. I decided to embrace Hanzo's misunderstanding as one more determining factor in the mission of opening a church. Hanzo National Church's founder said, "If I can register a religious institution on behalf of one of the most hated characters in online gaming right now, there's no limits to the legislation." So this guy was doing this as a total troll for the to the Brazilian government, right? But he actually founded a church on Hanzo.
If his house is church property, he doesn't have to pay property taxes anymore.
Oh, nice.
And the Hanzo Main is an insult that will get you labeled as a heretic. It's depressing because this could turn into a real religion.
I'm just thinking of all the different things you can try to do to avoid paying taxes, like routing your paycheck as a religious donation, which at least in the States is tax deductible, and then paying yourself out of the church coffers as a church employee.
That seems like a lot of paperwork to avoid your taxes, but if you make enough money, it's probably...
He's already done the paperwork. He's the church.
I know.
So it's not like he's doing more paperwork. He's just taking advantage of the paperwork he's done. And I'm sorry, BSV, go ahead.
Can he get taxes removed off of internet access since it's part of his religious worship?
Hell, he should be able to buy the game tax-free.
Well, what about the Church of Server? Can we all be doing this? Who owns that?
Surely Kennedy does. He would have the copyright on it, wouldn't he?
Vince, do you ever go through the trouble of actually turning it into a church?
Yeah, no. I guess it's whoever registers it first.
Bullshit, like he would never go through the trouble of doing that. But it's from his fiction. So, I mean, does he own the concept or not? Blizzard would own the concept to this if copyright mattered.
Would that matter, though, if he's... Because you said he's from Brazil, right?
He's in Brazil, so, yeah. You know, it's the National Church of Brazil. Or it's in the Hanzo National Church of Brazil, so...
I see.
Brazil's in the Pan-American Union, I believe, so it does observe our copyright and patent stuff.
So, I mean, I get that this guy was doing it as a troll, but there are enough people who actually main Hanzo in that game that, I mean...
If all of the Hanzos joined the Church of Hanzo, it will have attendance.
We next time we're playing the game, we should all go in there, and whoever's playing Hanzo should start espousing from the church. We need to get a copy of their religious documents.
Yeah, so
far it's just you have to kind of look like Jesus.
I don't remember most of the paintings of Jesus with him being, you know, Japanese, but, you know, hey, why not?
Long hair, mustache, beard, I think is what they were going for with that. Kind of looks like Jesus.
Although, to be fair, most paintings I've seen of Jesus depict him as an Italian man from the Renaissance, and I'm pretty sure he probably didn't look like that either, so...
What, you don't remember Jesus' dragon tattoo on his arm?
No, not really.
It was after he turned a lot of water into wine one evening.
You know, and I really don't remember the depictions of him with the disciples and the bow and arrow. I mean, I just... Not right. All right, I've spent long enough laughing at this. Next one up is from DSLReports.com, and it's just fantastic considering the fact that Verizon publishes the big security report every year. The records of up to 6 million Verizon customers have been exposed to potential theft and abuse after they were left openly accessible to the internet. According to security analyst Chris Vickery, the data was left unprotected on an Amazon S3 storage server controlled by an employee of Nice Systems. Rahana Israeli-based company. Nice helped Verizon store, collect, and analyze customer records for every customer service engagement customers ever had with the carrier. But Vickery, an employer of the security firm UpGuard, notes that Nice collected and stored this data for an unknown purpose, including account phone numbers and the Verizon account PIN codes used to verify customers. So, yeah, great. You can just go call in, use the PIN code from Verizon, and start fucking with their Verizon account, right?
Nice.
This exposure is a potent example of the risks of third-party vendors handling sensitive data, Vickery notes. The long duration time between the initial June 13th notification to Verizon by UpGuard of this data exposure and the ultimate closure of the breach on June the 22nd is troubling. Yeah, that's pretty slow response time considering what it takes to fix an S3 bucket is like 3 clicks to make it private. Third-party vendor risk is business risk. Sharing access to sensitive business data does not offload this risk, but merely extends it to the contracted partner, enabling cloud leaks to stretch across several continents and involve multiple enterprises, he adds. The breach is particularly notable given that Verizon just lobbied furiously to kill FCC broadband customer privacy protections that would have taken into effect in March. In addition, to requiring transparency about how customer data is used and stored, it required that customers... this is the FCC requirements. It requires customers opt in to having sensitive data shared. The rules would also have created baseline standards for how this data is stored, requiring customers to be notified in case of breaches. If you're a Verizon Wireless customer, you'll perhaps notice that you've yet to hear from Verizon about this latest breach, despite the fact that it happened more than a month ago. Verizon has insisted that it should be allowed to self-regulate in terms of privacy, but the new rules were proposed after Verizon had previously come under fire for covertly modifying user packets to track them around the internet without their permission. Verizon provided the vendor with certain data to perform this work and authorized the vendor to set up AWS storage as part of the process, the company tells ZDNet. Unfortunately, the vendor's employee incorrectly set their AWS storage to allow external access. The company also tried to tell the website that the overwhelming majority of the information in the data set has no external value.
Really? Are they 4-digit PIN codes? Because I bet you some of those are reused somewhere.
Just a thought. UpGuard's full analysis of their data breach, they've got a link to it. Update: the original security analysis estimated the impact of the breach at 14 million subscribers. Verizon has since corrected the estimate, stating that only 6 million subscribers had their data exposed.
Only 6 mil.
That's chump change in the big data game.
Business agreements or something with these companies, so I imagine they're going to sue the shit out of them, or could.
They should, because Verizon is, again, they put out this their big, you know, Verizon security report every year, you know, detailing breaches and tracking things and basically wagging their finger at everybody else for security practices. And the fact that then, you know, here you are turning around and, oh, look, they got breached too. But The thing with this that I wanted to talk about is it's through this third-party service, NICE. And yeah. Third-party services are how Target got breached. They're how HPC got breached. They're how Sony keeps getting breached. So it's not that these big companies suck at doing security. It's that they keep partnering with companies that suck at doing security.
Well, and they're probably smaller companies that really don't know what the fuck they're doing when it comes to computers.
Well,
and that's
obviously
why this
not,
keeps
because
happening.
They were dumping all this crap into a fucking public S3 bucket.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably could have found that shit with Shodan, for God's sake. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking terrible. And it goes to show you, man. I say it at work all the time. We have vendors come in and set, you know, turnkey solutions up or something like that. And then I go and I look at them or scan them after they're done. And I'm like, what the fuck are these people smoking? You know, there's open shares. There's, you know, fucking retarded default passwords and things like that. And a lot of times you have to protect yourself from the vendors that you use because they're a vendor on site doing, setting up an application or something like that, and they want to get in and get out, so they're going to take shortcuts. They're going to do it the fucking easiest way.
At work right now, I'm dealing with a vendor that set up our Cisco phone systems, and they're feeding us some line of bullshit about how we can't update them because Cisco won't support them anymore. So the vendor is trying to tell us we have to leave these systems running ESX5. It's like, dude.
What?
Yeah. Like, one, I know it's bullshit because it's right there on Cisco's website, but two, I don't fucking care that you don't want to deal with coming in and doing
that's
the
unacceptable.
So
it's time to shop around for a new vendor.
Yes, that's exactly what that is. Because we've had some other problems with that vendor that I can't exactly get into on the show. Anyways, you know, violating non-disclosure agreements aside, this third party crap is bullshit. I mean, and this especially in the medical industry is terrible. This is why you have all these devices that never get patched, is because the vendor that sells the MRI, you know, they still hook it up to some XP image that they made a decade ago, and they're like, "Eh, it's broken. Not gonna fix it."
Yeah, you have no idea, dude.
Yes, I do.
Or they also fucking like to throw, it's FDA approved. You cannot change anything in our solution. Bullshit. The FDA,
the
fucking
Food and
gives
Drug
you
Administration.
Yeah, yeah. They actually will advertise their shit as like it's a FDA approved setup or something like that. We had one where all we wanted to do, there was an isolated network, and the server for what it was going to do needed to bridge it, so it needed to have VLAN tagging set on the NIC.
Oh, sure.
They threw such a fucking fit, and we fought with them for, like, over a month, and they kept saying, oh, no, we can't because of FDA. We can't because of the FDA. My boss actually went and looked up and sent them the FDA regulations that say you can use your discretion on fucking solutions like this. Like, it does not – just being FDA approved is not like
– Yeah, they're not locking into a patch level. In fact, we covered the article on decking about a year ago, where several government agencies were putting out statements saying, we are not telling you not to patch, please fix your shit.
Exactly. And yet these vendors, because they don't want to do the work of having to revalidate their system or, I guess, take the risk or whatever of having new patches and new shit coming on those systems or whatever, they fucking use it as a humongous shield in front of them. And we're like, no, fuck you. This is going on our network. I'm responsible for it. We need to do it this way because I'm not opening up this other fucking network. And we finally got them to agree, but like I said, it took like a fucking month. We actually had to send them, so we did that, and then they claimed, we don't know how to do that. It was a Red Hat box. So we just looked up the freaking Red Hat like how-to on how to do VLAN tagging and sent it to them. And I was like, here, this is exactly what you fucking need to do. And they finally pulled their head out of their ass and did it. But it was just a gigantic pain in the ass, and it really did not need to be. Fucking VLAN tagging.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of shit is just stupid. And all it is like, well, your system's going to be a one-off, and we don't want to have to deal with it. And it's like, fucker, every network's a one-off. What are you talking about? Seriously, find me two corporate networks that are the same.
Yeah, you won't. You know, I just hate how they use that shit as a shield. Oh, can't, FDA. Like, oh, you know what, can't, because it's my fucking network, fuck you.
They have enough people that accept that answer that they just don't care.
What I think's going to be funny, at least in this Verizon example, the vendor isn't in the U.S. Now, under U.S. law, Verizon is responsible for everything their vendors do. But I'm not sure what Verizon can do to the vendor, since they're not in the U.S.
No, they're Israeli.
We have really good trade relations, so I don't think Israel's going to say, fuck a U.S. company. But it is still comes up with vendors, let's say, in India, that, you know, have a bit more leeway on saying, fuck you.
I would imagine they'd still sue the shit out of them.
Yeah, I would very much imagine that.
Yeah, but when it comes to getting a judgment, it would really matter on where are their assets located. Because I can sue the shit out of a company, but if their assets aren't within the jurisdiction of the U.S., good luck on collecting your judgment. You have a judgment, you won, you still don't have the money.
No. Yeah, I see what you mean. I don't know. I guess they probably use it as a point, like, hey, we know we got owned. Look, we won. Didn't actually get any money, but we won. Or something, I don't know.
Yeah, you just need to really look at vendors, and a lot of times, don't cut your IT. The people that you already employ know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah.
More than likely.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd say that's generally the case, but you never know, man. You do sometimes get some really weird shit. Especially with people who don't know what they're doing, but like to pretend that they do. But anyways, let's move on to the next article here, because it's also pretty crazy. Next one is from Engadget.com. Microsoft's Calibre font is at the center of a political standard. And so there's now hashtag FontGate in Pakistan. Pakistan's government is in trouble, and its fate may hinge on a Microsoft font. Judicial investigators probing the financial assets of the country's prime minister and his family allege his daughter and apparent successor forged documents to hide her ownership of overseas properties. They reached this conclusion because the documents from 2006 submitted by Mariam Nazwar's daughter of the prime minister, Nazwam Sharif, were in the Calibre font. That font, according to the investigation team's leaked report, wasn't publicly available in 2000 until 2007. A cursory glance at the history of Calibre appears that it became the default font in PowerPoint, Excel, Outlook, and WordPad in 2007. However, Microsoft's website states that version 1 of the font was available as a separate download as far back as 2005, and according to Font Consultant, so there's a job title, Font Consultant.
How do you Thomas, get that title?
Thomas Finnery was available as part of a Windows pre-release in 2004. The technicalities could prove crucial if the country's Supreme Court decides to take further action, but it hasn't stopped allegations from whipping up a frenzy in the Pakistani media and the Twitterverse. Calibre is still trending in the country, which Twitter uses using the term FontGate to deride the government. Pakistan's leading English newspaper Dawn even reached out to Calibre creator Lucas de Groot, who seemed skeptical of the font's uses before its public release. Why would anybody use a completely unknown font for official documents in 2006, he questioned. Meanwhile, the Wikipedia page for Calibre has received so many edit requests that it's now on lockdown. But someone did manage to squeeze in a reference to the corruption probe, so it's now part of the font's history. Sharif, who is currently in his third term, having been ousted twice in the past, found himself under investigation following historic Panama Papers leak last year. The documents originated from the world's biggest offshore tax firm, Mossack Fonseca, and detailed countless ways wealthy blah 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 blah. So anyways, apparently her argument is now, yes, I went and downloaded this font and installed it on my machine because I knew it would be the default down the road.
I would just say it looked like it was cool as fuck.
Yeah, I think Sard has the correct answer there.
Bullshit.
BSV, how often do you go download pre-release fonts and make them the default on your systems?
Never.
I didn't know you could download fonts separately. If it didn't come with it, I don't use it.
What? Really, Madman?
Yeah, I've never decided to go to Microsoft's website and see, hey, what kind of cool fonts are there?
Well, usually I don't go to Microsoft's website for that one. Usually Microsoft is not the definition of cool.
Yeah. Photoshop. You never Photoshopped anything, Madman, where you needed extra fonts and shit, or?
No, I've never played with Photoshop.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Huh.
Yeah, I kind of want to.
No, you can. Yeah. It's the internet.
Maybe.
Ooh.
Photoshop, documents saying I'm a billionaire and seeing if any banks will give me a loan for a billion. Walk away.
Yeah, that would be called securities fraud, and you can totally do that.
Yeah. Except after you do that, you need to go to Belize or some other nice little English country with no.
And just realize you're never seeing your family again.
With $1 billion, you don't think they're going to hop a fucking plane to wherever I live?
They will follow.
I will see them more often than I see them now. I will have family members I didn't know exist.
I think actually faking your own death is an excuse to disappear. I thought that part was just a given.
That won't stop them.
Madman, I'm your long-lost cousin Vinny. Fucking hook me up, bro.
Hook me up, bro.
Let me help you build that house that I'm never going to get to go see now, that I'm wanted in your country.
Yeah.
Lovely. Well. Huh. So all that work with that fucking ISO, and it's not even what I thought it was. It's just a bog standard ISO. It's not modified in any way. Don't worry about that. I'm talking about I wasted.
Did you
a lot
log
of time.
In and they're just pouring everywhere?
No, it's just a plain old 2012 install. I'm a little disappointed. Says it's not registered. I figured the whole point of the ISO was that it would have had some things added to it. Anyways, kind of disappointed now. It's like, not even a virus. It's like, that's kind of boring. I mean, shit, dude. I actually got a clean operating system ISO. It's like, oh, that's great, but where's the...
I want to work for my operating system, goddammit.
It's like, you know, you go through the whole trouble of finding an ISO on some illicit server somewhere, and it's just a plain old ISO. It's just... I could have gotten this shit from Microsoft. What the fuck, man?
Zykros, I'm now expecting a birthday card.
Oh.
So.
Pretty good.
Anyways.
Zykros is apparently Madman's father.
What? That would be strange, because I'm fairly certain I remember Madman's father dying like a decade ago.
Yeah, his other father.
Zykros is a ghost!
Well, have any of us actually seen this guy? Maybe it's a ghost that's been typing to us the whole time.
I make it a point to not see the people who listen to the show. They have to be freaky and weird.
Ghost Rider upgraded?
Ghost Rider upgraded.
I mean, I think before he's using a pen...
He says he's the secret sperm donor. Madman, he is your father. Crowd goes wild.
Zykros, we're going to need your best Darth Vader voice.
How are we going to do that in a font?
You're going to have to go download a custom font to get your best Darth Vader voice.
All lightsabers. All of the letters are made out of lightsabers.
All right. Next article is from factmag.com, and I'm not going to be talking about this for the reason you think I'm going to be talking about it. Apparently, SoundCloud only has enough money to keep running for another 50 days, according to a report from TechCrunch. The report comes in the wake of massive layoffs at the music streaming company last week when it terminated the contracts of 173 staff members across the world, about 40% of its workforce. Damn. That company literally laid off half its workforce.
Wow.
That's always a good sign.
No.
According to SoundCloud sources close to TechCrunch, company founders Alex Ludwig and Eric Wasselfross, I'm guessing at his name, admitted that the layoffs have only saved the business enough money to last until Q4, which it begins in 50 days. When SoundCloud was reached for comment by TechCrunch, the response was a reiteration of Ludwig's official statement from last week when presented the leaked information. A representative insisted it was fully funded into Q4. So SoundCloud is admitting, so even if they dispute the 50 days, they're admitting they only have enough money to make it, you know, they say fully funded into Q4. So that's the end of the year. Literally, they only have enough money to operate till the end of the year. But that was also, and that's what they're admitting.
Yeah.
But it was also in talks with potential investors. This conflicts with Ludwig's statement, which describes SoundCloud's future in a more positive language. By reducing our costs and continuing our revenue growth, we're on a path to profitability. How old is SoundCloud? We're on a path to profitability and in control of SoundCloud's independent future, he said last week. The report paints a sobering picture of life at SoundCloud after last week's layoff. An all-company meeting on July 11th was described as a shit show by one source who said that I don't...
That's just funny to hear in like corporate speak.
Did I have proper alliteration on the word there?
Yeah.
Okay, making sure I'm doing the reading right.
I liked it.
It was described as a shit show by one source who said, I don't believe that people will stay. The good people at SoundCloud will leave. Eric said something about the SoundCloud family, and there were laughs. You just fired 173 people of the family. How the fuck are you going to talk about family? That's a direct quote.
That's awesome. Wow.
According to sources at the meeting, the company admitted that it had known for months it had to cut jobs, but didn't inform any departments that they should be cutting costs. The report even alleges that the new staff were starting at the company with as little as 2 weeks before the job losses, with some new hires quitting jobs, selling homes, and abandoning rights to permanent residency to join the Berlin office. Damn!
God damn!
Oh, talk
what
about fucking people
over. Residency?
What a bunch of dickheads.
Wow, you give up residency, and then a week later, yeah, you're laid off. Fuck.
Yeah, because if you're doing, like, permanent residency in the U.S. and you give that up, you're... Unless you have a doctorate in something awesome...
You're not coming back.
You can come back. It's just going to take a while, because that H-1 whatever visa you were on, it got sent to somebody that really likes curry.
When questioned by staff as to why there hasn't been transparency regarding the company's finances or a freeze in new hires, oh my god, management reported that a hiring freeze would show weakness and cause people to ask questions.
No shit.
You know, not like laying off 173 people and admitting
yeah,
that they're not
no
funded through the, beyond the end of the year.
No, that doesn't show weakness. That just shows stupidity.
No shit. One new hire, Vojta Stavik, told TechCrunch that he had been offered a role at SoundCloud and was due to start on July 17th, but his job was canceled on July 7th, just before he had been due to move to Berlin. So this guy was immigrating to Berlin, and they canceled his job 10 days before he starts it.
Wow.
Stavik is now considering legal action against SoundCloud because he said his signed job offer included a four-week notice of dismissal. The company, Stavik claims, is now refusing to pay him his salary for that period.
Oh, of course they are.
So apparently they lost $44 million in 2014, $52 million in 2015. Various companies have been rumored as potential buyers, including Twitter, Spotify, and most recently Google, but the service's struggles to make deals with the majors have held back any buyouts. SoundCloud launched its subscription service, SoundCloud Go, last year, but the company has not chosen to release subscriber figures for the service, which means they're terrible.
Yeah, which probably means that, I mean, obviously we can tell this company's a piece of shit anyways, and that's why no one's bought him out yet, is because whoever is at the top is a fucking retard. Is anyone thinking of... you guys ever watch Silicon Valley, the HBO
no.
series? Oh, you should, because this is exactly what fucking sounds like the shit that they go through on there.
SoundCloud, then sent an update to FAQ saying, oh, this is all wrong. You're listening to some people who are upset about the layoffs. You know, they're fully funded in the fourth quarter. We continue to be confident major changes made will put long-term viability. It is our policy not to discuss individual employee cases. You know, so they sent a damage control note, right? So the reason I'm talking about this, besides, you know, having fun poking fun at a company that doesn't know how to run a company, so if you have anything you care about on SoundCloud, or there's things you follow on SoundCloud that you care about, download them now. Save them off, or figure out how to record a loop back on your sound card if it's not one that's enabled for download. There are a lot of people who put out tracks on SoundCloud. There are a lot of podcasts that use SoundCloud. There's a lot of news reporters who actually like putting raw recordings up on SoundCloud. So if there's something, there's something you care about up there, save it off, because even if the company is quote unquote fully funded through Q4, yeah, bullshit. they're talking about whether they're fully funded through 50 days for a couple of months or through the end of the year, which is 6 months. So the fact that they're admitting they're fully funded for 6 months, a company that size, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's not good.
That, and they're not going to tell you how long they're funded for. It would be a terrible way of running the company.
At this point, you have to assume it's days.
Yeah. Because as soon as you start looking insolvent, even if there's a way to pull yourself out, all of your talent is going to start looking for a new job. And the people worth keeping happen to also be the people that are going to have the easiest time finding a new job. So yeah, Warren Buffett's kind of right when he says, when you go bankrupt, it starts out slowly and then it moves too quickly.
So again, yeah, don't wait. If there's something on SoundCloud you care about, something you're following or tracks you've got archived, or you know, if you've uploaded stuff to SoundCloud and you don't have it backed up anywhere, go get it now, because this reads like SoundCloud's going away rather quickly. I have no doubt that somebody will eventually buy the brand and the website, because they have some decent technology for audio playing online and uploading and managing. They have a decent brand name. But if the company's gone, any potential buyers are going to wait until, you know, the shares are going for pennies on the dollar, then they'll buy them up. And by that time, the servers are probably going to be gone, files are going to be lost. Yeah,
you may be more interested in the technology than the actual files they had.
Exactly. So, if there's anything you care about on there, download it now. Just watch all the content creators start going, okay, well, I guess we're uploading it to YouTube with a static image instead of just the audio. So, because that's probably what's killing SoundCloud, is like, it's very easy just to take a static image and throw some kind of an effect over it and Windows Movie Maker and put the audio track down, and there you go, you're done. Hell, you can probably just do that straight up in the web interface. I haven't played with YouTube's online video maker in a while, but it's probably nothing just to take a couple of meme GIFs or just go steal something off DeviantArt and put your track up with that, you know? I mean,
a lot of the podcasts I listen to, just a picture of the dude and then an audio track on YouTube.
Yeah, so I hate that, because it means you're streaming a static image and it's got to be wasting a little bit of bandwidth just to maintain that static image. I realize with modern video compression it's not much, but compared to something that actually knows it's dealing with audio and, you know, you can actually do things like bit rate and deal with the audio correctly versus, you know, YouTube's presets and all that. But I don't know. I like SoundCloud as a platform, I truly do, so I hate to see it go away, but this reads like they're going to be gone in like a couple of weeks. So, I mean, they're obviously in damage control mode, talking about being fully funded and having investors, so
yeah, the S3 bill is going to come due at the end of the month, and they're going to be like, yep, fuck this, I'm getting on a plane to Belize, fuck this shit, I'm out.
It's like, well, it's time to take out a bunch of loans against the company and then declare the company bankrupt.
Exactly. gonna buy my house in fucking the Bahamas.
Well, guys, I'm gonna fake my own death. You all have a nice life.
Remember that horrible peanut allergy I have? Because you're gonna need to testify to that in court.
There you go.
Thank you, Time Master.
Anyways, last one up, last article we have for, last article. I forgot I still have another tab open that was confusing me. Anyways, I see what I did. This last one is from Mashable. Free Wi-Fi provider puts a prank in its terms and conditions and thousands agree.
Oh, please say it's you owe us your firstborn child.
Not quite that rough. Let's be honest. How many of us really read the terms and conditions when we sign up for anything? Well, 22,000 people unwittingly signed up to carry out 1,000 hours of community service in exchange for free Wi-Fi. Public Wi-Fi provider Purple added a spoof term to its terms and conditions on its network of branded hotspots to illustrate the lack of consumer awareness of what people are signing up to when accessing free Wi-Fi portals. In agreeing to the spoof terms and conditions, people were unwittingly agreed to do community service clause, which signed them up to clean portaloos, hug stray cats, and paint snail shells. So here's the actual text that they stuck in there. The user may be required, at Purple's discretion, to carry out 1,000 hours of community service. This may include the following: cleaning local parks of animal waste, providing hugs to stray cats and dogs, manually relieving sewage blocks, cleaning public laboratories at festivals and events, painting snail shells to brighten up the existence, and scraping chewing gum off the streets.
Nice.
Surprisingly, only one person during the two-week-long prank spotted the term. The prank forum, part of Purple's announcement that its first general data protection regulation complaint, Wi-Fi provider, falling in line with the UK government's new legislation, which comes into force in May 2018. The new GDPR law will introduce a condition requiring unambiguous consent before users' personal or behavioral data can be used for marketing purposes. Wi-Fi users need to actually read the terms they sign up for when they access a network. What are they agreeing to? How much data will they be sharing? And what license will they be giving consumers? So this was kind of part of the net neutrality protests that I don't have a story on and don't really want to talk about because it's ineffectual and stupid. The way they did these protests where, I'm taking all my YouTube videos down. We're putting a banner at the top of several subreddits. Like, that's not the argument with net neutrality. The argument with net neutrality is that you don't get certain websites unless you agree to a package or bandwidth agreements. It's not this, you're just not going to be able to access these things because, you know, we've decided they're not net neutral. So... anyways, they literally slipped in there the whole, you know, cleaning public laboratories and doing 1,000 hours of community service for free Wi-Fi. And 22,000 people didn't bother to read the thing and agreed to it.
It doesn't surprise me at all, man.
It doesn't. Who reads terms of service? Everybody's just like, next, I agree, next. I mean,
Exactly.
And pretty sure most courts have said that these things are not even enforceable because they know nobody reads them.
Yeah.
I was helping somebody register on a website today, and they laughed like, you're going to make me open up a separate window so you think that I actually read this shit.
I love ones that make you scroll all the way to the bottom. It's like you realize that you can buy mice that have flywheels for the scroll wheel, so you just, you know, hit it really hard and get to the bottom and not even read it. In fact, one of my new guys at work, he brings his own mouse from home because he refuses to use one without the scroll wheel that has the little flywheel on it. So it's just like... anyways. Let's see. I think it's time... this button. And Cycros, just for the record, not all software respects the N key, unfortunately. Most respect page down, but just like web forms act weird. It's like JavaScript takes over key bindings or something. I don't know. Anyways, so I got two links from Microsoft, sort of, for Digital Dojo. The first one up is the multi-million ebook giveaway. He's saying multi-million because the price of all these ebooks would add up to multi-millions if you paid for them all. But this blog author has gathered up a whole bunch of Microsoft PDFs and DocXs and even some Mobis and EPUBs are floating around in there. You know, security and privacy for Microsoft Office 2010 users, you know, because, you know, everybody likes using 7-year-old software to run their company. A whole bunch of Office 365 books in here are in here. Azure books are in here. Some stuff for Microsoft Power BI, stuff you're using that. Several PowerShell books, some SharePoint, SQL Server, a bunch of SQL Server. Anyways, it's a nice collection of a whole bunch of Microsoft ebooks. Some of them are kind of the annoying ebooks, like the very bottom one is Windows Server 2016 Licensing, which means it's probably like a 5-page ebook explaining the different versions of Windows 2016. But I guess that the information is useful if you're trying to convince your boss that you need certain versions of the server operating system, as opposed to using Linux like an actual sysadmin. Oh, did I say that out loud? Fuck. I'm sorry. Anyways, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. No, I'm not. Anyways,
pretty good.
And that just came out of nowhere. I don't really know. I just say things on the internet so that people can laugh at me. So, anyways, yeah, nice collection of ebooks. So, if you're dealing with Microsoft stuff at work, or you're doing a home lab, or you're just, you know, bored and really, really need something to read on the shitter, whole bunch of Microsoft ebooks.
Or well, actually, I'd have to be very bored.
You could get one of those ebook readers like Swavel likes to use. Actually, several people use them, but where the Android book will use like the AT&T voices to read the ebooks to you. I'm willing to bet the Windows 2016 Server Licensing book will put you to sleep if you have your text-to-speech reading it to you. So if you're having insomnia problems, these books could be really helpful. And the final thing I have is from the Microsoft Virtual Academy, which they have a free course published for PowerShell 3.0. And again, if you do a lot of Windows administration, you know, PowerShell is actually useful. I wouldn't have thought I would have said that a few years ago, but this day and age, PowerShell is how you do shit on Windows and AD and stuff. So decent course on PowerShell. It's from Microsoft. So, of course, it's got the guys with the huge touchscreen computers doing the training and, you know, the guy who looks like an uncomfortable pedophile sitting there and, you know, it's like trying to explain to you how to use PowerShell. But, and you know, you have the guy who's, you know, shaved his head because he's trying to be a cool hacker type. And, you know, the whole, with the large Microsoft touchscreens. I shouldn't make fun of these guys because I haven't watched very much of this video, so they could be all right. But, I mean, just the screenshot that's on my screen right now, it's like Captain Pedophile, Mr. Rogers Wannabe, and the I'm cool enough to shave my head guy. So, you remember when I said about too much rum in the cup? It's evaporated. I don't
Weird.
Know what that, legit out of whiskey, send help! You know what? I think we should stop. That's all I got for tonight.
Rum. It didn't evaporate. It's showing its head right now.
Rum. It does the body good.
Yeah.
Fourth meal. It's made of alcohol. Anyways, fuck, where was I?
Thank you, Time Master.
I think there was a Pac-Man sound effect coming up.
There's a Pac-Man sound effect. No. Because I haven't asked everybody for closing thoughts, and we're legally not allowed to call it future news. BSP, closing thoughts. Excellent closing thoughts, sir. Madman, closing thoughts.
Start exporting or outsourcing your tech jobs to India instead of Israel?
That'll just be worse, Madman.
I don't know. Can they Jew you out of your information in India?
Yes. Yes, they can.
Okay.
And they poo in the street.
We eat every day.
They do poo in the street.
But remember, Patel University is next to designated shitty street number 2.
They need one of those poo maps so you know what streets to avoid.
Oh, God. They're in California now. We had enough immigrants that we need those.
It's like, oh shit, I stepped in it again. Sard. Closing thoughts.
I'm thinking about naming my hard drive Dad Ass, so that when I back it up, I can say I can back Dad Ass up. What do you guys think?
It sounds kind of religious now that I think about it.